During their final debate in the 2011 race for mayor, UpToDate host Steve Kraske asked candidates Mike Burke and Sly James if the winner of Kansas City's top office would appoint the other one to a post. Sly James said yes, he'd ask Mike Burke to be involved in something he was passionate in, the arts in Kansas City. It didn't take long for Mayor Sly James to follow through on his promise, and Mike Burke took up the torch quickly. He's now co-chair of the mayor's task force for the arts. Good morning, I'm Steven Steigman, and this is Central Standard. Today, a look at what the arts can do for Kansas City, and what Kansas City can do for the arts. Mike Burke is an attorney, former city councilman, co-chair of the mayor's bi-state innovation team, and serves on or has served on numerous boards and committees that have influenced policy in the region. Mike, it's nice to see you again.
Good to be here.
And Harlan Brownlee is president and CEO of the Arts Council of Metropolitan Kansas City and a member of the mayor's task force for the arts. He's a trained dancer, and from 2005 to 2009, he served as the executive director for Kansas City Young Audiences. Harlan, it's nice to have you back in our studios.
Morning. Nice to see you as well.
Gentlemen, I read that if you were to take all of the arts and culture organizations in the area and make them one big company, not that that's necessarily a good idea, but if you were to do that, they would be the second largest employer in the region. Break that down for me.
Well, the total number of full-time jobs in the arts is 8,346. That's based on a study that we did this last year, the Arts and Economic Impact Study. And we did that in conjunction with the Americans for the Arts, their organization as well. That is a collection of 253 arts and organizations across the five county area in the metropolitan region.
Just so we're clear, what's the number one employer in Kansas City?
I think it might be Sprint or maybe Cerner.
I think, yeah, I can't remember which one, but one of those. Interesting. So we're not talking about a small impact of the arts, a rather large one.
Yeah, and the total payroll for those 8,346 jobs is $237 million. So I think what's significant about that is those are folks who are living here in Kansas City. They're contributing back to the economy. They buy groceries. They pay their utilities. They're, you know, have mortgages. And probably most significant is the fact that those folks have jobs that cannot be outsourced.
Hmm.
So those are people who are living here in the Kansas City region and reinvesting that money back into the local economy.
Hmm. I moved to Kansas City for an arts job, actually, about 19 years ago. And at the time, sure, your major performing arts organizations were doing well. The museums were great. But we were a bit of a hidden gem. What's changed in the last 19, 20 years, Mike Burke?
I think our arts community has matured, and it's while we have a wonderful new impetus with the Kauffman Performing Arts Center, I think the true story of Kansas City Arts is the breadth and depth of our artists community. We have some wonderful artists. We have not only achieved recognition around the country and on either coast, but I think what is growing here is much more self-confidence in our own community about the quality of our arts and the diversity of our arts and artists.
Well, every major city has a strong arts scene, right? I mean, it's one of those things that makes a city livable. Right, Harlan or Mike?
It's I tell you what's happened is our arts community has really prospered and grown even in the worst recession in our lifetime, whereas in other cities we've seen arts organizations fold. So it's a tribute to the community that we have prospered. I think the level of performance of all of our performing arts has increased in the last few years.
Give me an example during the most recent recession of an arts organization maybe in another city that either fell on hard times, folded, and what kind of impact did it have, if any, on Kansas City? Harlan?
Well, I know. I believe the Detroit Symphony
right.
has gone through some real difficult times in terms of their viability as an organization. I wouldn't say to you that I think it necessarily has had any impact on Kansas City. But to go back to your other question, I think that one of the most critical things that's happened here that has allowed this renaissance is what I would call it in the arts, has been the fact that we've been able to keep artists here in the community. We've been able to create an environment where they are able to make a living and to stay in Kansas City instead of leaving.
Tell me more about that. Why is that?
Well, I think a lot of it has had to do with the vision of individuals in terms of leadership, past mayors. I'm thinking about Kay Barnes and others who were in positions of leadership. But also Jim Leedy and his work in the Crossroads. The fact that many of the visual artists who were coming out of the Art Institute were going on to other places.
Mm-hmm.
And so we really kind of were in that brain drain. But with Jim, he understood the importance of keeping people here, helping to create an environment where they could live and they could work. And that actually became much of the impetus of the Crossroads.
Mm-hmm.
And with that, it just has kind of rippled out and blossomed, if you will. But we also have a couple of institutions that have also have long histories and have also made a big difference. Hallmark,
mm-hmm.
you know, one of the largest
sure.
employers of visual artists. Many of those individuals looking for other kinds of opportunities in the community. We have the Kansas City Art Institute, right? Lots and lots of great graduates coming out of that. And a lot of new influx and new media around digital and filmmaking. In fact, we've got a whole new film kind of sector developing here in Kansas City as a result of their work. And then we also have the UMKC Conservatory
mm-hmm.
and the graduates that have come out of there as well.
Speaking of some of the visual artists who have either come out of Hallmark or the Art Institute and this digital creative community, was that one of the reasons that Google chose Kansas City to be a launching point for Google Fiber, Mike?
No, it's one of the things. Kansas City can take advantage of Google Fiber.
Okay.
As you know, we have such wonderful artists. And there are special effects in a lot of the movies that you see coming out of Hollywood that are actually created in Kansas City. And we have, with the increased bandwidth, the ability to download some of those movie effects
sure.
in seconds and minutes instead of hours.
Sure.
That's something I expect Kansas City to excel in. Once artists on either coast that rely on digital media discover the quality of life and the cost of living here and the ease of doing business.
I was going to say, speaking of the coast, you know, we're often referred to as flyover country. And I will admit that as a guy who grew up on the East Coast, I didn't even know where Kansas City was until I looked into a job here. So, you know, that's just coming a lot of people are like that. But it's kind of hard to shake the cow out of Cowtown. I mean, the outside perception of Kansas City is that we're known for, let's see, the Chiefs, good or bad, right? The Royals, barbecue. But when you talk to people on either coast or elsewhere outside the Midwest, what do they say about Kansas City?
I think that's a perception that is changing rapidly. I get alerts on my cell phone to articles about Kansas City, mm-hmm. especially in the tech area. And just in the last week, articles in the New York Times, the Washington Post. I was interviewed yesterday by a writer from the Irish Times, which was a delight.
Wow.
The perception of Kansas City is changing. The buzz, as I like to call it, has created an atmosphere where expatriate Kansas City talent, that I think we've been a net exporter of talent for the last 30 years, and a lot of that talent is taking notice and returning to Kansas City.
Well, certainly we've had our share of large physical arts projects in recent years, the Kauffman Center for the Performing Arts, the Bollinger Center for the Kansas City Ballet, a beautiful expansion of the Nelson Atkins, but we still have to convince folks from out of town that we're artsy.
I actually would tell you that what we're seeing is that it's a lot of the people from out of town who are actually taking notice of Kansas City, and Kansas City is really starting to come onto the world stage. What's interesting to me is, and from where I sit at the Arts Council, we're hearing from those people outside of the community of what's going on in Kansas City, and this is pretty amazing. I think the real change that we have to make is we have to help educate the people of Kansas City internally about what we've got going. It's actually a lot of the folks who actually already live here that I'm not sure really recognize just how special and how much we really truly do have going on in the arts.
Is it an inferiority complex or just ignorance?
Well, I think we do, and I agree totally with Harlan. Actually, one of the five areas that we are focusing on is how we market our artistic community. Mm-hmm. And that's both nationally, regionally, and locally. And what we're – the feedback we're getting is that, you know, while we have organizations that do ad campaigns regionally and nationally, we need to better educate our own citizens that, you know, we have something truly special in Kansas City that other cities would just die for. Chamber took a group to Austin this year. Austin's got a great buzz, great national reputation. They do South by Southwest. They fund their arts publicly. I had a number of Austin arts people come up to me and say, gee, we wish we had your philanthropic community. We wish we had the venues that you do with the Kauffman Center for the Performing Arts. We think Kansas City is truly coming of age.
A light bulb just went off in my head, MXMW.
South by Southwest?
Mid by Midwest.
Yeah, well, mid by Midwest, yeah, okay. Yeah. Well, we've got something like that going now with Middle of the Map.
That's true. Yeah. That's a really good point. I guess that is supposed to be kind of our response or our own take.
And I think it actually that has a good chance of actually becoming something like South by Southwest.
You're listening to Central Standard on KCUR. We're talking about the arts in Kansas City. And here's a question for our listeners. Do you participate in our region's arts scene? And if so, are you an artist or are you an art goer? What do you think Kansas City should be doing to better embrace and promote the arts in the region? Our number is 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. You can also email us, centralstandard@kcur.org, or join the conversation on KCUR's Facebook page. So this week you kicked off a series of discussions seeking community input. The first took place on Monday at the Arts Tech Building in the Crossroads. Let's hear a clip from Kansas City Mayor Sly James. We'll get to that clip in just a few moments. He said some nice stuff. We'll hear what he said in just a few moments. But there were roughly 300 people in attendance at this meeting. I mean, that's a pretty good turnout.
It's a great turnout.
It was a Monday night.
It was.
Yeah. Right. You also had talks at the Kansas City Community Center, the Marlboro. You're planning talks at the Kansas City Community Center, Marlboro Community Center, and others. What are some of the common things you've heard from the community at these meetings?
There are some common themes that are developing about what the city, and again, the focus of the mayor's task force is the role of the city of Kansas City in the arts. First of all, I've got to say the mayor's support is wonderful, and it's real, and it's enthusiastic, and he gets it. Our city council gets it. We have met with all of them. We've met with city manager. I think you'll see some real support for the recommendations that come out.
Right.
A number of common themes. I touched on one is that we don't inform our own citizens well enough about the quality of the arts community. There's a need for more centralized listing of all the things that are going on. There are a number of attempts at that. Mm-hmm. But we need to better inform our citizens of what's happening every week in Kansas City.
Are other cities doing this?
Yes, yes.
I mean, I guess in the past, let's jump back 10, 15 years, where was the place to go for all that information? That centralized location was the newspaper.
That's right.
Newspapers have cut back some on their arts coverage and their listing, and that's not all. I mean, there are still two, you know, good art print arts listings in this town, but that's not enough.
Well, we're living in this digital age, and so we have a lot of different calendars that have cropped up. One of the things we're working on at the Arts Council is the creation of a consolidated calendar, where we're asking all of those people who are creating all those different calendars to feed all into one calendar. But we think there's other ways that we could do a better job with that. For example, we could create profiles for people so that they would go into they would list a certain type of programming that they're interested in.
Netflix for the arts.
Exactly. Using some of those algorithms.
If you like this, you might like this.
You might like this. Uh-huh. Exactly. And then receiving like a weekly email that covers those particular interests that they have, or maybe they want to stretch out a little bit and be a little more adventuresome in terms of their artistic participation. So there are ways that we could probably leverage technology and some of the social media to do a better job with getting the word out about what we're doing.
Does Kansas City, Missouri, or other municipalities for that matter in the area, need to start supporting the arts financially?
While that is not the major thrust of the mayor's task force, we are going to explore what the funding options are. The city has a 1% for arts program.
Right.
It was initiated back in the
1980s. Explain that program for our listeners so they know.
The 1% of all funding for municipal buildings, such as the new crime lab that is being constructed, 1% of that budget is set aside for artwork. That's a program that's been around.
When was that put into place? Do you remember?
When I was on the city council back in the 80s is when we put it into ordinance form.
Mm-hmm.
It's been around quite a while.
What do other cities do? Tell me about some other cities and their funding for the municipal funding for the arts.
Well, St. Louis has a hotel tax. Austin has a hotel tax. Some states have a statewide tax. Intriguing to me is Minnesota, where they tried to get a statewide arts tax and failed. And the conservation community, the hunters, failed at a conservation tax. Guess what happened? They combined forces and on arts and conservation did a statewide tax.
No kidding.
Yeah, and I think Phoenix did one with health care with a tobacco tax.
Uh-huh.
Where they combine the two together.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Do you think that would play well here?
Well, I think to go back to your question is that before we go down that path of asking the question about the funding, what's most important is that we come together in terms of what we want to accomplish. And then we ask the question, well, how do we pay for that? But mm-hmm. What we know is that before we even have that conversation about dollars, we need to have a clarity of what do we want to accomplish here in the city. What are the ways that we want to work together? Then we can begin to ask the question, well, then how do you pay for that? But we haven't even gotten to the point yet, and that's the whole point of the Mayor's Task Force for the Arts, is to begin to have that conversation about what do we want?
Mm-hmm.
What do we think is important? And what are the best ways that we can leverage the resources that we have? And how can we deepen the relationship between City Hall and the arts community here in Kansas City? What's the best way to do that? And then we can get to that question that you're asking about. Well, then what do we do there and how do we make those? What are those investments that we should be making?
Well, arts are largely in Kansas City are largely privately funded by foundations, corporations, and to a lesser extent by individuals. Does that need to change?
I think we could look at a stronger support for a public support for the arts. And what I would tell you is that this philanthropic community we have here in Kansas City has been absolutely amazing.
Mm-hmm.
When you think about what it's created and what it's done, in my mind, I go to the point of saying, imagine what would happen if we were able to bring both a public and a private partnership together.
Mm-hmm.
And imagine what that could look like. That could be even more powerful and could be even more, could it be even better for the Kansas City region and for Kansas City, Missouri, if we were able to really marshal those two together.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some aspects to that that are certainly within the city's realm. One that is very important to Mayor James that we're taking a very serious look at are after school and summer programs for youth. Not every young kid wants to go shoot hoops.
Right.
We used to have a more robust parks program, theater in the parks. Director of Parks and Recreation, Mark McHenry, is on our steering committee, very interested in helping develop some of those programs for youth.
Hmm.
And that's very important to our future.
Well, let's talk a little bit about arts in schools, public schools. I grew up in an area that's strong support for the arts. No doubt that's the reason why I got involved in the arts as a professional years ago. But do area school districts, public school districts, support the arts to the extent that they should? And if not, what should we do about it?
It's hit and miss. As we have taught more to tests and to statewide and standardized tests, I think some of the programs, arts and history and local government that don't get tested have fallen by the wayside. We have engaged the school districts. One of our steering committee members, Eric Leonard West, he gets it. He understands it. He understands their funding issues there. That's one of the gaps that we need to address as a community.
I mean, not to turn this conversation into a whole conversation about arts and education, but when you put arts up against other, you know, other subjects, and arts aren't tested on state test scores, is it hard to make that argument?
Well, if you don't assess it, you don't tend to teach it, and that's the general rule there, but. To go back to the other question you asked about what are those themes that are emerging out of the conversations, one of those other themes is art education. Mm-hmm. And I think actually in the long run, this is a really, really important point for us to look at. The art education, and I call it the value proposition, has really two parts to it. One is how will we support the arts community if we don't develop future audiences? Mm-hmm. So we know that when kids have introductions to the arts, when they have sustained instruction in the arts, they become audience members and they become patrons and supporters for the arts. So we really do have we really do need to address this, especially as we think long term down the road of how will we sustain what we've done in the arts. The other part of it, though, and it's a little bit more abstract, is looking at what are the skill sets that are transferable that you learn in the arts that you can then use in other types of employment.
Mm-hmm. Like public radio.
Public radio, yeah. I mean, you think about a kid who's experiencing and watching, working through a musical, right?
Yeah.
They're learning all about the ideas of collaboration and how all these different parts work together, from set design to costume design, choreography, direction, all of that. So there are so many lessons that one learns in the arts that you may not ever become a professional, but are applicable to your work here. And I know with Mike, we've had the conversation about even his work as a lawyer – and his experience in the theater in the park has had some residual help, you know, in terms of being able to transfer those skills. So when we also think about what are the kind of skill sets that we know businesses need in the future, we know that arts education is also a part of that.
What models of arts support do we see in other municipalities? We've talked a little bit about this already, but I want to get some more specifics here. What type of support do we see in other municipalities, and what kind of impact are they having on their cities?
Well, let me sure. Take the example of Austin.
Okay.
Austin, their municipal government has a staff of 20. That is comparable to our staff of one in City Hall. I'm not saying we need 20 people in City Hall, but what most cities, Cincinnati's another one that I can cite, they have have elevated, excuse me, within City Hall, the arts either to a cultural affairs department or a a mayor's office of the arts. I think, you know, we have Municipal Arts Commission, and it's kind of out of sight, out of mind many times. I think one of our areas that we're looking at is governance. And within governance, and I think the city council and the city manager are very open to this, what can we do to elevate within City Hall the role of arts and culture and creativity? So that city plays a more robust role in our community in helping to coordinate.
Ah, I see. You're listening to Central Standard on KCUR. Our number 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. We're asking, do you participate in the art scene? And are you an artist or are you an art goer? You can also join our conversation on KCUR's Facebook page or email us at centralstandard@kcur.org. We're talking with Mike Burke and Harlan Brownlee. I'm Stephen Steigman. Central Standard returns in a moment. Welcome back to Central Standard. I'm Stephen Steigman. We're joined today by Mike Burke and Harlan Brownlee, both members of the Mayoral Task Force for the Arts called Envisioning Arts and Culture in Kansas City. Our number, 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. You can email us at centralstandard@kcur.org or join the conversation on KCUR's Facebook page. Gentlemen, in tough economic times, how hard of a sell is it to convince policymakers to contribute public dollars to the arts?
Well, I would say to you that the way that we do that is through showing the economic impact of the arts and in actually helping folks and those policymakers understand the importance of the arts as an economic development tool. One of the things that we found out when we did the study is that the economic impact, direct expenditures, is $273 million a year in Kansas City region. That's over $250 million. That's clearly an economic engine. And I think what's incumbent on us in the arts community is being able to help the policymakers understand that actually investing in the arts is good for business. It's a way to actually get a return on your investment.
Are you encountering any resistance from city council members?
No. As a matter of fact, just the opposite. The city just recently completed a strategic planning study on economic development called Advance KC. Mm-hmm. The number one recommendation in that report was to use the arts as one of the strong lures for Kansas City. We're in a worldwide competition over the next decade for talent.
And, explain that.
Mid-America Regional Council estimates we have 8,000 or 9,000 jobs open in Kansas City in the tech arena.
Okay. We're talking talent beyond the arts scene. Okay. We're talking
– That's right.
Got it.
What we are seeing are people discovering Kansas City as not only a place of for tech jobs, but the quality of life. Because what's happening with, especially with the millennial generation, is they are picking where they would like to live, and then searching for a job, as opposed to going where they think the jobs might be. And Kansas City is winning that battle right now. We have a long ways to go with our competition. And, you know, people are still flocking to Chicago and Denver and mm-hmm. Austin and San Francisco. And as I've said, over the last 30 years, we've been an exporter of talent. I think over the next decade, we can be an importer of talent.
What types of things are the Chamber and other organizations doing to attract individual workers to Kansas City?
Well, one of them is the work that's being done by Kansas City Area Development Council in particular and their Creative Crossroads campaign, looking at how we attract businesses as well as talented tech folks to Kansas City. What's really interesting is that there is a connection between folks who work in high tech, who are very creative, very innovative, and their desire to live in an environment that's also creative. And what we find is that they are very much attracted to an environment like the Crossroads. Mm-hmm. In fact, one of the big surprises we had a while back was finding out that there are over 100 IT firms in the Crossroads.
Seriously?
Yeah. We tend to think of the Crossroads as the arts district.
Right?
And many of them in film and video,
right.
And digital storytelling. So, I mean, it's become an exciting area. I think one of the things you mentioned, the Chamber, one of their big five ideas is the creation of the downtown arts district, which would include the conservatory, might even include a radio station.
Yeah, I've heard that before. I think we're in the 30-year plan or something.
I do think the concept of the arts campus has considerable support in the business community, mm-hmm. in the civic community, in the funding community. We have very, very dynamic leadership from Peter Witte, the dean of the conservatory, downtown council, and the chamber on this issue.
Does it have enough business support to raise the $100 million it's going to take to build the place?
I think so. We will need some help from the state of Missouri, and the state of Missouri state legislature has, at least conceptually, endorsed a plan to match capital dollars that are raised privately for improvement of our university system.
Speaking of the state of Missouri and the state of Kansas, the reports that Governor Brownback in Kansas is calling for a reduction in arts spending from the state from $700,000 over 2 years to $200,000. Your reaction to that?
Well, I think it's unfortunate. I don't think it's necessarily the investment that you want to make. But I think it's important to understand the context in which that has happened. The Kansas Arts Commission was abolished a couple years ago. With a lot of pressure and a lot of people talking about the economic development aspect to the arts, the governor did recommend and put in the budget for this year $700,000. What's unfortunate is that that $700,000, they were reworking their criteria and looking at how would they use that money to put together projects specifically that were economic development models using the arts. Unfortunately, they have not really granted much money back out. And as a result of that, he's looking at that and saying, we gave you $700,000. You haven't spent the money, so now we're going to do $200,000. I do think, though, ultimately, it would make more sense to invest that. It's unfortunate that that situation has happened where the money has not been spent. But if you look at the Missouri side—
I was going to say, let's flip over to this side.
You see a better story. And, in fact, you see a governor who really, truly does understand the economic impact. Last year, the governor's recommendation for the Missouri Arts Council was $600,000. Some of that money was for the operation of the Missouri Arts Council was to come from the Missouri Cultural Trust.
Mm-hmm.
This year, through some advocacy efforts, as well as talking to a number of legislators, that recommendation is $4.2 million
wow.
in the governor's budget.
That's a
significant increase. But again, you should realize that when you look at the economic impact in the state of Missouri, it's $1.1 billion. $1.1 billion in direct economic expenditures across the state of Missouri. So it's a good return on investment. And I will tell you as well, if you look at other states around the country, you will also see governors who recognize the importance of that. Not too long ago, there was a large gathering of mayors who came together. And one of the topics on that particular agenda was talking about the arts as an economic development tool. So there are a lot of folks who are beginning to understand that and use that as a means of helping.
Let's take some phone calls here. Let's say hi to PJ. PJ, welcome to Central Standard.
Hi, thanks. Thank you. I really appreciate y'all talking about this today. My question specifically is about jazz in our community. We have a vast talent of players here in our area, and I feel like we've kind of lost the old cultural significance jazz has played in our city. And I'm just wanting to know if the mayor has any plans to promote jazz, and I can't tell you how many times my boyfriend and I have been out listening to jazz. Someone will come in from out of town, and they'll just be blown away by who they're listening to. And then we'll say, "Well, hey, if you want to hear so and so, go to this venue." And we feel like we've really lost that that heritage. I'm just wanting to know what the city or what the mayor has planned to promote jazz in our community.
PJ, thanks for your call. I appreciate it. Gentlemen, it is jazz certainly, we hear this question often on this program. This isn't the same jazz city it was in the 20s and 30s and 40s, but jazz still does play an important role here. What role does jazz play in the overall arts vision of Kansas City?
Well, one of the themes that came out of some of our public meetings was we don't have the venues that we used to. I mean, jazz is not necessarily something you put in the Kaufman Center. It's much more intimate type of performance. And, you know, we do have a lack. We've had some places close
mm-hmm.
That were very popular jazz venues. I think, you know, we'd love to encourage more venues. How we can do that through our task force recommendations is something we're going to be considering, but it's certainly a huge part of our heritage. I think we'll come up with some ideas how to encourage refocusing on our jazz heritage.
And I'd say to all the listeners out there, if you have ideas about that, if you are passionate about jazz and you want to have your voice heard, this is the opportunity to do that. This is the time for us to hear from folks who want to tell us what they think about that, and in particular, what would they like to see happen mm-hmm. with jazz in this community?
Good time to put a plug in for the upcoming meetings. Tell us where people can find information about them.
You can go to our website, which is envisionackc.org, and we have three meetings this evening. Two at 5:30 at the Shoal Creek Patrol Station North at the Kansas City Blueford Branch Library, and at 6:00 at Maddie Rhodes Center on 17th Street. We have 9 meetings tomorrow, and those are listed.
Please don't say you have to attend all 9 meetings all those nine meetings?
I'll be on video at all of them.
Oh, okay.
The mayor and I did a video introduction, but I'm trying personally to make as many meetings as I can because I get so much more out of it. Just listening to people's ideas.
Sure.
You can see the schedule as well on the website.
Cool. We'll get a link to that up on the Central Standard website at kcur.org. Let's say hi to Chris. Chris, you've got another question about jazz in Kansas City.
Yes. Good morning. I am marketing and communications with the American Jazz Museum, and we are an economic engine of sorts. We bring in like $9 million worth of business through our programs and offerings there. A couple of days ago, as a matter of fact, we had a tour group from Brazil in the museum, and they spent over $1,500 in our space. And it seems to me promoting jazz, which we put on events, we have exhibitions, we have the permanent exhibit there, we have a festival every year, a major festival, and we have the award-winning Blue Room that's known worldwide. When people outside of Kansas City, whom I come in contact, think of Kansas City, jazz is among that list of highlights for them. And it's really interesting that this talk is going on because we have had to go along with the paradigm shift of reaching people marketing-wise. As a nonprofit, we have a limited budget, as you probably can imagine, and we do a lot of partnering with the public radio stations, public television, to get the word out about jazz. And the events that we put on in our concert series, as an example, the Jamming at the Gym, the Historic Gym Theater, we put on 5 concerts a year on Saturdays throughout the year, and we bring in world-class talent, whether that be someone like Bobby Watson, who is now based locally, or we're bringing in Kurt Elling as an example February 16th.
Chris, let me ask you this question. I mean, you obviously market the American Jazz Museum, and each arts organization and countless individuals act as their own marketing team. Could they work together more? Could promotional efforts be better coordinated? That's a question for you, Chris, and for our guest here in studio.
Well, from my perspective, and having a background of promoting digital music, when the record labels basically changed to what it is now with iTunes and everything else, there was a paradigm shift that happened there, and everybody was talking gloom and doom. It's just retooling and understanding the platform, the way people engage. What we have done with our CEO, Greg Carroll, and the board of directors here at the museum, we realize that we're developing a new website. We engage social media a different way. We partner with arts organizations who are doing that same sort of thing through Facebook, and we try to reach people on those mobile devices that they carry around in addition to any print and normal advertising things we do.
Chris,
that's what we have found.
Thank you. Chris, Mike Burke and Harlan Brownlee, do area arts organizations need to combine efforts a bit more?
Well, Chris, first of all, does a wonderful job at the American Jazz Museum, as well as Greg Carroll. It's truly an asset to our community. He touched on a couple of things that we're finding out. One is that people outside our community that come visit Kansas City are much more aware than some of the people that live in Kansas.
Huh.
That's an issue that we need to address. Harlan is working on some very interesting things, combining our tech area and some things that we can do digitally to promote Kansas City.
Yeah, I'd go back again to the need to internally market Kansas City and to help educate people about what we've got going on. You know, one of the other things that we found out in our economic impact study is we were looking at what's the average amount that someone spends for lodging when they come out of town. And it's about $13. And one of the questions was asked was, well, where in the world is someone staying for $13 a night? Well, what we realize is that a lot of people are coming in from out of town who come into town and they go back home. Let's say they're coming from Des Moines or Springfield or
something. Just for the day.
Like, yeah, they just do the one-day run out. But a lot of folks are actually staying with relatives. That's also what that number is about. And when you think about that, you realize that the concierge for our community are the actual people living here,
right?
The residents. And so we've got to figure out how do we help those individuals in our own community know more about what's going on and to understand that. And I think that's our real issue. That's the real what we need to tackle in terms of just how do we do that. And I think there are probably a lot of ways that we could be more effective in terms of working together.
You know, Chris brought up this group from Brazil that came to visit the Jazz Museum. And, you know, do you ever envision a time when people come to Kansas City for a culture tour? I mean, people come here for conventions. They come here to visit friends and family, like you say. They come to attend sporting events. They come to pig out at the American Royal Barbecue. How close are we to getting people to come to Kansas City for the primary purpose being to take advantage of our cultural institutions?
Our Convention Visitors Association and Rick Hughes are looking at that. They are promoting Kansas City as a cultural and creative crossroads. Now, one of the things I'd like to see, you go online for any hotel in New York and there's a Broadway package. I'd love to see our hotels promote cultural packages for visitors. I think what we're learning is Kansas City over the last 10 years has transitioned much more from a convention destination to a visitor's destination. You see that in some of the offerings of some of our hotels by offering more family-friendly packages. Mm-hmm. I'd like to see more arts and cultural packages offered.
I've been neglecting a lot of callers here for the past few minutes, so let's get to them now. 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. You can also email us at centralstandard@kcur.org. Let's say hi to Brad from Kansas City, Missouri. Brad, welcome to the program. Let's go on to Bob from Kansas City, Missouri. Bob, thanks for holding on for us.
Oh, hey, thanks a lot. Yeah, I was just driving into town this morning, and I saw the DC-9 again. It's a display. It's taken off over Southwest Boulevard. I'm sure a lot of you
is that,
and
oh, DC is that a DC-3?
I think it's over the roastery.
Over the roastery, right? Yeah.
Oh, is it a DC-3? Thanks for correcting.
Sure. Not that it really matters. It's a plane on top of a building. I mean, that's a pretty substantial thing, right?
And it's so inspiring to me again. I mean, I've seen it before, but it just made me feel good. And I just wanted to use that and some other things way back in, I think it was probably in the 50s or 60s when they had a plane right on the corner in Main Street. And the municipality that allowed a building to be built across a highway like they did when they did the Bartle Hall expansion, and then they topped that off because I believe the arts 1% thing was in effect back then with the antenna displays that are on the very top of that building.
The spindles, yeah.
Yeah, and what I'm trying to say is that we've had it here, and we do have it here, and all we need to do is to continue having it here because it's like you were saying, people want to be around that. People who want to be creative want to be around creative people, and so that's a good thing. And I'm glad you guys are doing the job you're doing. All we need to do is to keep doing it and doing it as good or better as we've done it.
And I think you're picking up on this idea of what we call creative placemaking. And the creative placemaking is the idea that and has gotten a lot of good support from the NEA. Creative placemaking is this idea where we take advantage of the cultural as well as the historical aspects of a unique community in a unique way. Because you can go to any city and begin to see they all look the same. What's interesting about creative placemaking is it allows you to find what's unique and individual about that community and to use that and leverage that in some way.
Give us some examples beyond, you know, creative architecture.
Well, I would say to you the Jazz District is one of those ways. How do you leverage that in the best way possible? One of the new projects that we've been looking at with the Downtown Council is the renovation of Boone Theater, right, catty corner of the Gem. Again, looking at what is the historical assets for that community and how do we make the most of those. We've discussed ideas, too, about how UMKC could have some of their students in student housing in that particular area. So there are ways to look at what are these cultural assets that we have and how to make the most of them.
One of the five major areas of our task force is urban planning. And, you know, there are a number of areas that come to mind. Certainly the Crossroads area, the West Bottoms, 18th and Vine, the River Market area. There are some rich areas, our Westport area. There are some rich areas that, you know, by and large have developed organically. I don't think, you know, the city comes in and says, all your artists move over here. But there are things that we can do through our tax incentives, like we did in Crossroads, mm-hmm. where if you lease your building 51% or more to artists, you get your taxes frozen. So I think especially as we get our institutions, certainly if we do a downtown arts campus, mm-hmm. it raises a whole bunch of issues for the city to explore. I think in the area of our Nelson Atkins Museum, with all the cultural attractions and the Kemper Museum in that area, we need to think more holistically in how we promote not just the individual institutions, but the district.
Hmm. A couple of emails here. Leslie writes us at centralstandard@kcur.org. I'm working on a project that would blend arts and technology and provide 16 to 24-year-olds with marketable skills. Many people think of the arts as something that makes us feel good, but there are ways to make a living if combined with 21st century skills. Also, they have a role in providing kids with a way to express their thoughts and feelings in a productive way. We also received this comment on Facebook. Phil, a photographer, writes us, I think one thing that would help the arts, not only in Kansas City, but in Missouri and the region in general, is for the mayor or Envision Arts, with the support of the mayor, to aggressively lobby Jeff City for tax credits to film companies making movies in Missouri. To put this into perspective, over 90 feature films were shot in New Orleans last year, while very few, if any, major features were shot in Missouri. Mm-hmm. The Kansas City film community needs this in order to grow and be noticed. Now, I should note that Louisiana has some incredible tax breaks for filming. Does Kansas City need to be lobbying more in Jeff City to try to pass something like this?
The answer is yes.
Yeah.
We used to have a state tax credit for filmmaking.
Mm-hmm.
That was done away with about 2 years ago. Unfortunate, because Missouri is a very attractive venue, continues to be attractive venue with or without the tax credits for filmmakers. And we have a robust filmmaking community here.
You certainly do.
The other comment was on the convergence of technology,
right,
and art, something we're specifically looking at. As you know, I also wear the hat as a co-chair of the mayor's Bi-State Innovation Team. There are tremendous opportunities in our area because we will be a gigabit city, a gigabit of fiber to the home. That opens up wonderful opportunities for providing entertainment to the home. We have enough entertainment opportunities in Kansas City. We could do a Google channel, just uploading some of our artists to YouTube and provide round-the-clock programming.
We have so much content.
It sounds like Leslie, who wrote that email, should go out to one of the public meetings. I think it's a good idea.
Right.
Let's say hi to Nancy in Liberty. Nancy, welcome to Central Standard.
Thank you very much. I just wanted to put a plug in for smaller communities. I live in Liberty. We're about 31,000. We have Liberty Symphony, we have live theater group, we have arts festivals, we have a historic downtown Liberty group which promotes arts, all different kinds of things to draw people to Liberty. We have jazz the first Monday of every night. We have a community chorus. All of these things are vibrant and wonderful for the area in the Northland. I hope that with any overall planning, calendar-type thing that evolves from the work that's being done, that areas like Liberty and probably Parkville and other places are included, because we're north of the river, but we're not in another state or far away. We're 20 minutes from Kansas City. So we have a lot going on. And second comment quickly, Kansas City is so blessed to be able to get the performers that we do to come into the Harriman Jewel series, the Kansas City Symphony, Friends of Chamber Music, all of the rep. We're blessed, and everything we have is affordable.
We could
not do this in New York.
Nancy has a really good point there. We do have a very affordable city, and to her earlier question, is Liberty part of this overall plan?
Well, Nancy points out something. I'll put my Northlander hat.
Uh-huh.
For those of us north of the river, most of our opportunities are in – towns like Liberty, Parkville, Gladstone, Weston, you know, those are the emerging art centers north of the river. Gladstone in particular has reached out to us. They're doing their own kind of outreach to the community to get ideas for their city. While the Mayor's Task Force for the Arts is Kansas City focused, the next step is how the region interacts with the arts in Kansas City.
And in many ways, that idea of a regional cultural plan is what is next on the agenda down the road. But first, we have to look at what Casey Moe's got. Mm-hmm. And 60% of those cultural amenities are in Kansas City, Missouri. So we want to be able to expand that out in time and begin to include the rest of the region.
Tell us once more again how people can become involved in these public meetings.
You could go to envisionackc.com or .org, and you can take a look. You can also put in your own particular input of ideas as well as see the schedule.
Neat. Gentlemen, thank you so much. Our guests today were Mike Burke and Harlan Brownlee, both members of the Mayoral Task Force for the Arts. Mike, Harlan, thanks again for being with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You can find our Central Standard Archives podcast and a lot more at kcur.org. Tune in tomorrow as we explore immigration policy and its effect on our communities. Our show is produced by Matthew Long Middleton. UpToDate is next with a look at oil and gas exploration in Kansas. I'm Stephen Steigman, and this is Central Standard.